Welcome to the Top 10 Secrets of Authentic Kabbalah. This session is going to be jam-packed with content. We're going to go into Kabbalah's blueprint of creation. We're going to talk about the soul, reincarnations, the 10 sefirot, the tree of life, the five spiritual worlds, free choice, the Hebrew letters, the Zohar, and Kabbalah's recipe for spiritual development. That is a lot. That is a lot. It's going to be a roller coaster. So make sure you're ready for this. Sit back and relax, but make sure you don't have any other disturbances in the background. I'm going to need your absolute focus. Top 10 secrets of authentic Kabbalah coming up. My goal is that by the end of this crash course, you'll be able to cut through the misconceptions about what Kabbalah is and what it isn't, get answers to some of the deepest and most puzzling questions that people ask, and also gain a solid basis to access Kabbalah's time-tested method for spiritual development. So, in the end, I will also share with you everything you need to know about KabU, our online learning environment, and I will also provide an exclusive offer for those of you who complete this crash course and want to go deeper. So just a few words about myself before we begin. My name is Joseph. For the past 18 years, I've been studying and practicing and teaching the authentic wisdom of Kabbalah, and I'm a creative director and a senior instructor for KabU. So let's dive into secret number one. Where did we come from and where are we headed? That's quite a big question, isn't it, right? So let's dive in. Secret number one is Kabbalah's three-arrow model. Now, what this is essentially a breakdown of the whole of reality, the evolution of all of creation into three parts: pre-matter, everything that exists before the material world, and that includes before time itself, the material world and all the development that happens here for almost 14 billion years already, and post-matter, what we attain from this material world as we access the higher levels of spiritual attainment, of consciousness, non-material existence. Okay. So that's a lot. We're going to start to take it in bit by bit. So the first state of creation is a state where one desire is created. We typically signify this desire as a vessel. This is the first state of creation. It's a vessel that is completely fulfilled. That is what creation is all about in the first state of creation. You can think about that state like the state of an embryo in a womb, right? We've all been there, by the way. We've all been at some point, we've been like an embryo in a womb. Now, if you think about the embryo's state of existence, it's a state where the embryo is surrounded by an environment that completely takes care of it, gives it whatever it needs, all of the nutrients and energy and all that it needs for its survival is provided to it. All that it doesn't need is taken away from it. There's essentially, if you want to look at it more emotionally, there's waves of warmth and love that are continuously enveloping that developing being, that fetus or embryo in a womb. But there's only one thing missing, right? And that is, if you think about your own experience, even though we were in that experience, we don't remember any of it, right? Why is that? Because we had no consciousness of it. And that essentially is the situation for the created being in this first state of existence. So we have a situation where the created being is found in a state of 100% unity, complete oneness. Creation is one, and it is completely, it's a desire that is completely fulfilled by the force that created it, but it is unconscious. So let's call this first state in existence unconscious unity. Now, the issue is that because the created being has no consciousness, it has to exit the womb. So much like the embryo that has to develop in the womb and then grow outside of the womb, come out of it, exit it, the same thing or a similar thing happens with the created being. So the created being has to descend from that first state of creation through 125 degrees. And in these 125 degrees, the created being essentially descends from that state of complete unity, from that state of complete bonding with the force that fulfills it. And so it loses contact with that force. This is what happens here gradually, but also the vessel itself, the desire itself, the creation itself is being shattered into pieces. It becomes shattered pieces, myriad shattered pieces, instead of one desire that is in complete bonding with the force that created it. So no contact at all and complete shattering. And this last degree here marks the beginning of our material world. This point here is what scientists will identify as the Big Bang, this explosion from which our material development began. It set in motion the creation and the expansion of the material universe. So this is where this happens. So where are we now? This begins the second state of creation, which is all of our development in the material world. And so here, on the surface, we see material development. However, creation is still a desire. The only thing that was created is a desire. And this desire continues to evolve. However, it appears to us here as matter. And so on the surface, we would see the development of the still level of existence, then the vegetative level, then the animate level, and then the human level. So on the surface, still, vegetative, animate, and human, all these creatures begin to exist on a planet, in a universe, and so on. But behind the scenes or beneath the surface, the desire that is evolving is gradually becoming conscious. Remember, we had a desire here in the first state that was completely unconscious. It had to descend. It had to descend all the way down 125 degrees. And now it is beginning to evolve to a conscious state of existence, even though it is completely separated from that state of unity that it started from, until we begin, we, as in the human level, the most evolved conscious level of the desire, begins to climb back up, meaning we begin to rise up the spiritual ladder. Let's make this point here, conscious awakening. So here we begin to climb back up the same 125 degrees. So it's the same spiritual ladder that has been created from above downwards. Now we rise through those 125 degrees from above, from below upwards. And so this takes us all the way to the third state of creation, which I will mark here. And so the third state of creation, if you are quick to think about it, is actually similar to the first state of creation, isn't it? It is essentially identical. Because when we start climbing back up the 125 degrees of spiritual ascent, of the spiritual ladder, essentially we are rediscovering our connection with each other as a single created being and our connection with the governing force that created the desire that we are. So when we come to the third state, third and final state of creation, we also achieve the same unity that existed in the first state of creation. Then you may ask, what's the difference then? Why the whole detour? If the third state and the first state are equal, are identical, then why the whole detour? And the answer, of course, is that creation now became conscious. And so now we have a situation where we can call it conscious unity. And for that conscious, for that independent consciousness of the created being, for this, let me just highlight it to make it abundantly clear. For this, the whole of creation was created. Now look, there is a ton of questions. There is a ton of questions that you can ask about this three-arrow model. And obviously, this is broad strokes. This session is pretty much a crash course. So I'll stop it here and we'll move on to the next one. I will tell you that at the end, I will direct you to where you can find a mini course in Kabyu that specifically elaborates on everything in this model. So without further ado, let's move on to secret number two. What is the soul and how do we get in touch with it? Now look, we tend to think about the soul as some sort of an inner part that we have within us, something that has to do with our emotions, our maybe characteristics, our personal traits, our creativity, maybe our aspirations and goals in life. All right, so secret number two is the soul has nothing to do with any of the above. The soul is a sense or a device or a vessel that can perceive, that can sense the non-material reality. So if we go back to where we were here, the vessel, the spiritual vessel that is called a soul, is the vessel that can perceive, that can receive and sense and experience everything that exists in here, above this axis of the material world, in those 125 degrees of non-material reality. That's what the soul is about. It's a vessel that can sense that. So the question that comes up from this is, of course, do we have a soul? Do you have a soul? Well, the answer is actually quite simple and very pragmatic. If you develop a soul, you have a soul. And if you don't, then you don't. Now look, I recognize that this might shatter some preconceptions that we might have even from childhood. But here's the thing. We all do have the beginning of the soul. We have the seed that, if planted in the right environment, it can grow into that vessel that can perceive and experience and live in the non-material reality. So the question to ask really is, what is that seed? How do we get in touch with our soul, right? And here I would just say, notice if you ever asked yourself the big questions, right? By the big questions, you know what I mean. The questions about the meaning and purpose of life. what is going on here? What is the purpose of all of this, of everything that exists? What is the meaning and purpose of my life? Is there a greater purpose than just spending 80 or 90 years in this world and working in some job and having a family maybe? And is there something grander, bigger, beyond what our eyes can see, beyond what our maybe even all five senses can experience? Is there a realm of reality that can actually answer all our questions about meaning and purpose? What is the purpose of the whole of existence? When these questions appear in us, that is when we get in touch with the seed that becomes the soul. We all have these questions within as human beings. If you're a human being, you have these questions somewhere deep down inside of you. It's just a question whether they have awakened, whether that point has awakened within you. And the funny thing is, we typically ask them as children, and we typically as children don't get the answers, and therefore we kind of put it to sleep. And those in whom these questions don't go to sleep and they stay very much alive and kicking, they are the people in whom Kabbalists say the soul is beginning to develop. And that seed that it starts from, this point is what Kabbalists refer to as the point in the heart. This is because, let me zoom in for a second. This is because the heart in Kabbalah represents all of our desires. And the point in the heart is this desire that cannot be fulfilled on the level of this world. It cannot be fulfilled in this axis. This is why when you're asking what is the meaning and purpose of life, truthfully, you're actually asking about how can I climb back up to this level of existence, to this realm of experience, to the non-material reality. When this awakens in the person, Kabbalists call this, like I said, the point in the heart. And they explain that all of these questions that we have, these big questions, they're not philosophical meanderings. They're not some theoretical, you know, oh, once in a while I think about this, maybe with a good friend over a beer or something like that. They explain that while we don't detect it, this is the beginning, this is the seed, this is the beginning of a unique desire that is developing in us. And if we will plant that seed in the right environment where it gets everything that it needs in order to grow, then it will become a desire that can actually experience the non-material reality. We just have to learn how to focus on it and begin to apply what it needs to it so that it can grow. This is what Kabbalists have been doing for millennia. This is essentially the authentic wisdom of Kabbalah. That's the only thing it is truly designed for. And Kabbalists have devised an empirical method for how to develop that point. And I'm going to expand on this more in secret number 10. But for now, let's go on to the next one. Secret number 3 is this. Are reincarnations a real thing? And what happens when we die? All right, so reincarnations and what happens when we die. So look, here too, I got to start from the classic thinking, right? The classic thought is that we have a soul and it goes in and out of our body typically when we, when we die, then the soul comes out of the body. When we are born, then it goes into a new body. And once again, secret number 3 is it doesn't work that way, okay? So look, you already know from secret number 2 that you don't have a soul unless you develop one, right? So what are reincarnations, right? So let's start from here. Only a desire was created. This is the sense, the sensor that will experience reality. And desire is the only thing that was created. So what are reincarnations? It's very simple. Reincarnations, to put it simply, are the evolutionary phases or cycles or states that the desire goes through until it reaches its final level of development here. So all of those phases and changes and cycles that the desire needs to go through are called reincarnations, and that has absolutely nothing to do with the experience that we refer to as our material body, which is a certain way in which we experience our desire on this level called the material world, on this level of perception. So how does this work? Let me add some more details into the picture here. Okay, so as the desire descended from the first state of creation to the second state of creation, as we already heard, it went through 125 degrees. All of those degrees of relationship with the light that used to fulfill it in full, and now it's being reduced and reduced and reduced all the way to zero, all of those states are now being encoded. They're being encoded into something that Kabbalists refer to as reshimo. This word is in Hebrew. I'll write it in one second. And what it means is essentially a list. Reshimo comes from the word reshima, which means a list, or roshem, which means impression. And essentially, it's the same thing. It's a list of impression from all of those 125 degrees that the desire went through from above downwards. And so this, yes, I'll add the text here. So this reshimo, which essentially means records, that's what it means, right? It means records. Let me add this word here just to make it clearer for you. So these records, this is like the spiritual DNA of the soul, if you will. This is essentially the database that represents all of the states that the desire or ultimately the soul needs to go through in order to reach its final level of development. Just like we have biological genes, there's also spiritual genetics. And so what happens then to the soul when we die? What happens to us when we die? Nothing happens, you guys. The body rots in the ground and we become worm food. But if we manage to develop the spiritual vessel, the soul, while we have the conscious opportunity in this zero state of existence that we begin our consciousness from, this level of existence called the material world, if we develop our soul and attain it, get in touch with it in an empirical way, this is called attainment in the wisdom of Kabbalah. If we attain to some level, even the slightest, smallest first degree of the first degree of the spiritual ladder, if we do that, we are already in touch with our existence here in the spiritual ladder. And then changing a body becomes, and I quote my teacher's teacher, the Rabash, he said, changing the body is like changing a shirt. Because if you're connected to a higher level of existence, just like you don't, you know, cry when you cut your nails, right? Because it's a lower level of existence that needs to go through a cycle and maturation, decline and death and rebirth and so on. And the same thing when you attain the soul, a higher level of consciousness. You identify with that, and then changing the body becomes like changing a shirt, unless you don't develop your soul, in which case the point in the heart begins to evolve through, yes, through potentially many life cycles, until you decide to make a conscious move and develop it into a soul. All right, this will take us into secret number 4, and that is, what are the 10 Sefirot and what is the Tree of Life? First of all, it's basically the same thing. Essentially, it's a synonym. If you say the 10 Sefirot or you say the Tree of Life, you're basically saying the same thing. The term Tree of Life, at least in the context of Kabbalah, was popularized or was invented, conceived about 500 years ago by the Ari, one of the greatest Kabbalists, who wrote about 2,000 pages describing the structure of the Ten Sefirot and how they are the vessel to perceive the spiritual reality. And he called this composition Tree of Life. Now look, I'm sure that a lot of you have seen this this diagram before, right? The diagram of the Ten Sefirot, the Tree of Life. And once again, unfortunately, there's if you go online and look for this, you will find all kinds of versions of this diagram rife with misinterpretation and sometimes with all kinds of materializations. And my recommendations, honestly, is to not look at those things at all, because it puts a visual in your mind that is just wrong, connecting this structure with all kinds of material depiction. And the truth is this: the Ten Sefirot have nothing to do with our corporeal experience, with our physical perception of the world. The Ten Sefirot, and this is secret number 4, it's very simple for you to get it now after the previous ones. It's the structure of the spiritual vessel. That's it. We talked about a soul. We talked about the point in the heart developing into a spiritual vessel that senses the non-material reality. That is what it's built from. The spiritual vessel is built from these 10 qualities: Keter, Chochmah, Binah, Chesed, Gvura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, Malchut. And as I began saying, this, all of this begins to develop from, once again, this point in the heart that if we learn how to develop it, the structure of the Ten Sefirot evolves from this seed, this seed that needs to be planted in the right environment called the point in the heart. This unique desire becomes the Ten Sefirot if we know how to develop it. And the Ten Sefirot are the structure of the spiritual vessel. Nothing material. On every level of the spiritual reality, every one of these 125 degrees, you will perceive reality through a vessel of Ten Sefirot. You cannot perceive reality, the spiritual reality, if not through these 10 qualities. Everything that exists here above the level of this world, everything in those 125 degrees, can be referred to as light, or the quality of unconditional bestowal, the governing force of reality, the governing force of nature. That light can be perceived only through 10 qualities that are referred to as the 10 Sefirot. Think about it just like our physical reality. We always perceive it through our 5 senses. It's actually exactly the same. Just like, you know, you can be in London or in Berlin or in Hong Kong or in Tel Aviv, right? But wherever you go, you will experience it through those 5 senses. In the exact same way, whatever world you are in the spiritual reality, whatever degree you're in, you will experience it through the 10 Sefirot. All right, so Sefira, what's a Sefira? So Sefira basically comes in Hebrew from the word sapir. Sapir means sapphire, Sapphire simply means luminous, something that shines. So that's where it comes from. And now you can understand that essentially what we're talking about is that these are layers of desire, let me draw it like this, that have developed an intention that is similar to the spiritual reality, and therefore they can perceive the spiritual reality. Just like when a radio in our world, a radio receiver, generates a certain, in order to perceive some wavelength from outside, it has to generate the same wavelength within. And so a desire that has this intention that is similar to the spiritual light around it can now receive this light within, and therefore it's called that it shines. That's why Sfira, from the word Sapir, which means luminous, shines. The 10 Sfirot, they all shine with light. Spiritual light, of course. All right, this will take us to the next secret. And this is secret number 5. What are the 5 spiritual worlds and how do we access them? I'll tell you right away. How about this? The 5 spiritual worlds, very simply, are the world of Adam Kadmon. I'll write the words in Hebrew as well. The world of Atzilut. The world of Bria. The world of Yetzira. And the world of Asiya. Now, that's it. All right, these are obviously just names. We need to understand what are they. But first of all, it's important to make sure we all are clear on this, that all of these worlds have nothing to do with our world. They're all above our world. Our world, the physical world, is here. All of them are on the spiritual ladder. But what are they? And this takes us to actual secret number 5. Secret number 5 is very simple. World means concealment, because the meaning of the word in Hebrew, world, simply means olam. It comes from the word ha'alama, which means, again, concealment. That's literally what the word means. So when we say world, or when we say concealment, we mean the same thing. That's what it means in the wisdom of Kabbalah. So world is not some place that I go to, some space, right? We're talking about a reality that is above space and time to begin with. So a world is not a place that I go to. It is a level of concealment that I am at. Okay, so this means that all of these levels here, are levels of concealment where the light gradually becomes completely concealed. So in the world of Adam Kadmon, the spiritual reality, the spiritual light, is the least concealed. It's 100% revealed, let's say, in the vessel. Then in the world of Atzilut, it is more concealed. Then in the world of Bria, it is even more concealed, and so on, until we go down through the spiritual ladder, through these 5 worlds, these 5 levels of concealment, and our world is a degree which is in total concealment. That's where we are. We're on a level of perception where the spiritual reality is completely hidden from us. We have no concept and no connection with anything that's happening above time and space, above the level of the material world. So the question that we should ask, of course, is how do we access these five spiritual worlds, right? How do we access these levels? So first, we need to understand exactly what has been concealed. What is concealed from us? So as we kind of mentioned in the beginning, we were created as a single desire. This single desire, also called the collective soul, the one created being that was created, the one creation that we all are, this single desire was gradually shattered. And so if in the beginning it is one desire that is filled with light, right? That's in the beginning. Let's say this is here in the world of Adam Kadmon. Gradually what happens is that this desire becomes, first of all, shattered. So let me kind of do it like this, maybe. Okay, I think this kind of makes the point. So here in these worlds, as we go down the spiritual ladder, basically what we have is a reality where the soul is more and more shattered, or the experience of the created being, more accurately, is one of more and more shatteredness, separateness. So let's say that on this level, there are still connections between all the pieces, but they are already pieces. They're no longer one, right? So this is like a network. The more we go down, we are talking about a reality that is more shattered until we reach the level of our world, which, remember, is total darkness, complete concealment. And in our world, what do we have? We have sparks of this collective souls, shreds. This is what we called before, let me zoom in here for a second. This is what we called before these, let me use a different color here, the points in the hearts. So in this world, we no longer feel that we are one collective soul, one created being. We don't even feel that we are interconnected necessarily, right? We feel that we are separated individual beings, but we have a spark. We have this seed that senses the collective soul if it is developed. So all of these pieces, all of these sparks come from the collective soul, right? And we are those sparks. So in this world, we feel completely separated, and rising up the spiritual ladder, rising up the spiritual worlds, accessing the spiritual worlds means rediscovering the unity of the collective soul and the unity of the collective soul with the force that created it and fulfills it. So the more we rise up the spiritual level, the more we access higher spiritual worlds, the more we discover the oneness of all of existence, all of reality. Okay, let's move on to secret number 6. Do we have free choice, or is everything predetermined? Okay, so if you look at the three arrow model, the question actually is a very serious question, because here you can see that we are going through a process, right, from above downwards, then we develop in the material world, then we go from below upwards, and there's a beginning point, there's an end point, there's all these states, these evolutionary states in between. Then where is free choice? Where is there any room for free choice? So here's how it works. From above downwards, all of those 125 degrees through the Big Bang that set in motion the expansion of the material universe, through the development of still vegetative animate, and until this point, everything is automatic. All of this development happens directly from above downwards, it is called. But with the evolution of the human level of desire, the human level of nature, the human level of consciousness, here comes a unique opportunity for conscious participation in the process of development, in the process that is already predetermined. So secret number six is this. We do not have free choice when it comes to the path that we have to go through. But we do have free choice when it comes to how we experience it. And this is a subtle yet dramatic difference. This will be the whole difference between what Kabbalists call path experiencing the whole process as a path of suffering versus experiencing it as a path of light. And so what we're talking about is something that will change how we experience the process, because if we begin to learn about where we have to go through, what we have to go through, and where we need to, where are we headed, where we're going, and we begin to identify, consciously identify with the process, that becomes the difference on a global level between a world war and a development of peace and prosperity, and on a personal level between not knowing what is happening to you in life and where you're going and being depressed or all kinds of things like that, versus being in the director's seat as you go through your own life. And so this is a deep and profound thing, free choice, obviously. Kabbalist Bala Sulam, the preeminent Kabbalist of the previous generation, explained this in great detail over many pages in his article, The Freedom. But this is just broad strokes. Let's go to secret number seven. What is the secret of the Hebrew letters? Now look, once again, misconceptions and misinterpretations. There's all kinds of commercially inclined Kabbalah centers that will tell you that if you look at the Hebrew letters, you will get some special powers or something along these lines. It doesn't work that way. It just doesn't. If you look at the Hebrew letters, no matter how hard you look at it with your corporeal eyes, you're just going to be more focused on the visual shape of a letter. That's it. The letters are symbols. They are visual symbols of spiritual states. More specifically, they are symbols of the relationship between the giving force, or the light, the force that fulfills the vessel, and the receiving force, which means the force of the created being, the nature of the kli. Kli means vessel in Kabbalah, the vessel that receives the light. And so all of the Hebrew letters, the 22 letters, they represent different relationships between giving and receiving, which is, again, the governing quality of nature and the governing quality of the created being. The different relationships between them give us different visual shapes. Let's look at an example how it works. So basically, vertical lines generally represents reception, and horizontal lines generally represent giving or bestowal. And if you take, let's say, for example, the letter Aleph, right? Let's make it a big one. Let's make a big Aleph. Big letter Aleph coming up. There we go. If you look at the letter Aleph, for example, then here what you have is one shape that represents the quality of Bina. And this bottom shape here of the Aleph represents the quality of Malchut, which is a quality of reception. And also, actually, this line here in the middle, this diagonal line, represents a certain relationship between them. It represents, in this case, a separation between the qualities of bestowal and the qualities of reception, or Bina and Malchut. If you're interested, this is called, by the way, Parsa. So in any case, you get the idea. These letters are symbols of spiritual relationships. Relationships between the quality of bestowal and the quality of reception. All the 22 letters, by the way, they all come from the world of Atzilut. From here. This is the level of attainment required for the Kabbalists to be able to detail the relationships with the upper light and their spiritual vessel in those 22 visual shapes. Okay, secret number 8. What is actually written in the Book of Zohar? What is truly written in the Book of Zohar? So look, the Zohar, on the one hand, many people have heard about it. It is a very known, worldly, world-renowned book. But how many people actually opened it? How many people actually tried to know what it's about? And so on the one hand, people think, or there's this rumor, or they have an idea that the book talks about secrets of the universe, secrets of reality, some prophecies. On the other hand, it's so much shrouded and clouded in mystery that there's even fear from opening this book, fear from opening it and maybe learning things that you can't unlearn or something like that. Now, as you are starting to get used to in this session, here too, most of what you've heard about the Zohar is probably a misinterpretation. The Zohar only talks about spirituality. It only talks about spiritual states. The Zohar was written by a group of people, a group of 10 people, who achieved all of the levels of all of the degrees of the spiritual ladder. So they, between them, these 10 people, now you can see it. So those 10 people, the authors of the Zohar, they managed to create such a network between their desires that this network was essentially their collective spiritual vessel, their 10 sefirot. They themselves were also 10, and they built a vessel of 10 sefirot from their joint desires. And so with that powerful spiritual vessel, they managed to achieve all the degrees of the spiritual ladder, including the final correction, meaning the state of complete oneness that all of humanity achieves only at the end of the whole process. And so all the Zohar talks about is the spiritual degrees. The thing is this, and this is really secret number 8. The Zohar is written in coded language. Let me just show you how that works. So in the spiritual world, there are no objects. The spiritual world is a world of forces, a world of qualities, relationships, and lines of code that govern the behavior of the material world. In our world, however, right, in the physical world, we have all kinds of things. All kinds of things, right? We have, let's put here a sun and a bee and a tree and a person and a house. Okay, I think we get the idea. So we have all kinds of things in this world. And this stuff is way too big and not proportional, but we'll live with that. Okay, this is one big B. All right, you get the idea. So in the physical world, we have all kinds of things, physical objects. What Kabbalists do is they use words from this world to describe the spiritual world, because here is their problem. In the spiritual world here, it's not just that there are no things, there are also no words. There are no words because there are no there's no physical expression. So how do you describe a world of feelings, a world of a sensation of the governing forces of reality that govern our world, but you have no word for them? So what do you do? So because of this unique relationship between the spiritual world and the physical world, because there is a root for everything that exists in our world, there is a spiritual root, okay? So this is called roots, everything that exists here, and this is called branches. And so because they attain the roots, the Kabbalists, and they attain the unique relationship between the roots and the branches, they are therefore able to use the branches in order to indicate the roots. And so Kabbalists came up with languages that are coded in this following way. They are languages called their general language is called the language of roots and branches, which means again that they will say things like, if you open the Zohar, you can find all kinds of depictions about donkeys and rivers and people going through different terrains and finding different things and experiencing different situations that may seem very vivid, very visceral, very visual, very physically tangible. But they're actually using all these words in order to indicate the roots, which have no words. So they use the thing words to describe forces. And that is how all the true writings of Kabbalah that talk about the spiritual reality are actually written, because there are no words in the spiritual reality. Now, here's an important thing. Here's the thing. If you read it intellectually, if you read the Zohar intellectually, it's just confusing, right? Because you're trying to understand a language that you just can't possibly understand. But if you, you know what, let's just add it here. If you try instead, let's put the book, this is the book of Zohar, okay? Yes, let's say this is the book of Zohar. So if you try to read it intellectually, you get confused. But if you approach it from your point in the heart, meaning the developing seed of your spiritual vessel, and you read it with what we call the right intention, meaning you're not trying to intellectually make sense of the words. You're trying to use the text as an elevator to take you from the level of this world to the true meaning of the words, which is the roots, the spiritual roots. Then the book becomes a device for you to rise into the spiritual world. Okay. Obviously, this requires more explanation, and generally it requires guidance and practice, And I'll talk more about it in secret number 10. Let's go to secret number 9. Why was Kabbalah hidden for 2,000 years? Why was Kabbalah hidden for 2,000 years? And the secret is quite simple. Mostly because Kabbalah was purposely hidden. It was concealed by the Kabbalists themselves until who weren't 100% successful about it, by the way. But it was purposely concealed until humanity was ready. Here's how it works. Kabbalah begins 5,781 years ago. This is what we know of the time when the first Kabbalist emerged and began developing this method. Now, in parallel from that time, human society is developing as well. So since 5,781 years ago, you have the wisdom of Kabbalah developing in parallel to humanity. Now, 2,000 years ago, something special happens in the development of mankind. And the revelation of the wisdom of Kabbalah is intertwined with the development of human society. And so 2,000 years ago, Kabbalists identify that humanity is now entering the last stage of development of the human desire. They discovered that humanity is going to enter it, not that that humanity already entered it in their time. And so, again, if we look at our three-arrow model, so 2,000 years ago, Kabbalists identify this, that what's going to happen is a dramatic rise of the human ego. That means, in short, without getting into all the details of it, this means, in short, that humanity is entering such a phase of development where disclosing the wisdom of Kabbalah before this level is complete, before humanity completes this development, would mean that it would be more harm than good. It would be misunderstood, misused, and the wisdom of Kabbalah would just, revealing it, publicizing it, would just do more harm than good. And that's why 2,000 years ago, and that's when the Zohar was written, by the way, Kabbalists themselves make efforts to hide the wisdom of Kabbalah for the time when humanity completes this stage of development and is globally ready. And that time is now. If you want to be very specific about it, then there we go. In 1995, Kabbalist Baal HaSulam said, this is pretty much the time where humanity is globally ready for spiritual development. Interestingly, this is also pretty much the time when Kabbalah became extremely popular. And the fact is that even before that, a little bit before that, a little bit meaning already in the 16th century, basically, already here, there was a big change and Kabbalists already began to disclose the wisdom here. But it takes time, and 2,000 years combined with a coded language do their part, and that's why there's so much misconceptions, misinterpretations surrounding the true nature of the wisdom of Kabbalah. And the true nature is that if you have a point in the heart, this wisdom is for you. If you have a desire for spirituality, that's all you need in order to access this wisdom. And this takes us to secret number 10, the last one, which is, what is Kabbalah's recipe for spiritual development? So, look, it's very simple. You already know that all spiritual development begins from what we call the point in the heart, right? These guys here in the drawing. There we go. These guys here, right? The point in the heart. All spiritual development begins from that. Now, the point in the heart is like a seed, as we said. It has all of the genetic information, quote unquote, all of the spiritual DNA is already there. All of the future states of development are already there. All it's lacking is just like a seed. It lacks the sun, the nutrients, the water, everything that the seed needs in order to grow, a nutritious environment. So what is the nutritious environment for the point in the heart? And it has three components. Kabbalists break down all you need as an environment to plant your point in the heart. They break it down into three major things. Number one is you need an authentic guidance, authentic teaching. That is critical because otherwise you just won't read the wisdom correctly. There is, as we've already seen, so much mystery and misconception, mislinkage and misinterpretation surrounding the wisdom of Kabbalah. And that's why there is such a thing as a teaching lineage in the wisdom of Kabbalah. For example, my teacher is Kabbalist Dr. Michael Lightman, and he is the student and successor of the Rabash. That was his teacher. And the Rabash was the student and successor of Kabbalist Yehuda Ashlag, Bala Sulam, who was the one who wrote the commentary on the Book of Zohar, and so on. So if the teacher is not connected to an authentic teaching lineage, then you're just bound to make mistakes. That's number one. Number two is you need direct connection with the authentic sources. And why is that? Because the sources, as we've described a few minutes ago with the Book of Zohar, these source texts, the Kabbalistic books, they describe these states of the spiritual reality. And so if you use them correctly with the correct guidance, the book becomes an elevator for those states. So you have to read about the actual states that are in the spiritual world from some Kabbalists who already attained it. And the last part is other points in the hearts. And so when you combine all of these three together, when you combine all of this three, this is the recipe, what happens is that you have your point in the heart. This is you with your point in the heart. And it now has the correct guidance that it needs in order to approach reading about the spiritual states, its future states of development, and with the help of other points in the hearts, you can correctly envision and aim your desire to those spiritual states, because those spiritual states are about the connection between the points in the hearts, about the connection of the collective soul. So if you have other points in the hearts, and you have sources that talk about the states of connection between those points in the hearts, and you have guidance that tells you how to read the book correctly and how to relate to the other points in the hearts, now you've turned these books into an elevator that raises you to the spiritual reality. Now you can draw from the spiritual reality what Kabbalists refer to as surrounding light, which means that from your own future states, remember that the spiritual genetics is already there. All those future states of development already exist in potential in your point in the heart. So now it's just like pouring water or giving nutrients and energy and sunlight to your point in the heart so that it can develop. And that essentially, in a nutshell, is the whole recipe of spiritual development offered by the wisdom of Kabbalah. Now, where do you find such an environment? This is exactly where KabU steps in. KabU is an online environment designed to give your point in the heart everything that it needs and do so in the most convenient, accessible, step-by-step fashion. So let me show you a little bit of what's inside KabU. So first of all, inside KabU, you'll find topic-based courses. These are courses that focus on a specific topic, complete with video materials, reading materials, practical exercises, and everything you need to zoom into a specific topic. For example, We talked about the three-arrow model that Kabbalah uses to explain the whole of reality. This course goes in depth into everything you need to know about the three-arrow model, breaking down each of the axes in detail, answering all the questions you might have. This course is called Enter the Zohar, and as the name implies, it goes deep into the Book of Zohar. How was it written, its origins, its special language, and most importantly, how to read it correctly, how to access it so you can absorb the great influence of the Book of Zohar. And so, similarly, there are different courses on various topics, and we keep making more of them all the time. In addition to these topic-based courses, there's also a structured learning path. These are four specific courses that you take in a series, one after the other. It amounts to about 20 weeks of guided study. It's all step-by-step with ongoing guidance, and it takes you from step one deep into the authentic wisdom of Kabbalah. In addition to that, you also get access to our weekly live events. These are typically intimate and informal sessions where you get direct contact with Kabbu instructors such as yours truly. We practice the wisdom together with fellow students, and students get an opportunity to ask anything they want on a regular basis. In addition to that, we have the student forums. So if you have a question on any topic, in any course, there's always a forum where you can post your question and get an answer from a Kabbu instructor. The forums are also great for students to share their impressions with each other, which proves to be really fun and inspiring. Lastly, in Kabbu, you will always have materials on the go, which means that in every course, we make sure that you have MP3s, MP4s, transcripts. So if you want to download an MP3 and play it in your ear while you're jogging, if you want to download videos to your phone, read transcripts of lessons while you're commuting, all of that is always available. Okay, so a Kabbu membership gives you unlimited access to all of the above. That includes the courses, the live events, the structured learning path, the materials, the student forums, all of it. Now, just to get some perspective, if you look into the typical cost of online learning environments that offer this level of product, with VOD courses and live streams and ongoing student support and all the rest, you'll be looking at programs that ask you for no less than hundreds of dollars. But we are a nonprofit organization. Our goal is to make Kabbalah accessible to everyone. We want to keep the cost low. So, a Kabbu membership costs $19 per month. That's the monthly cost, and there's more. We have an exclusive offer for students who completed this crash course, meaning you. There are three bonuses that you can take advantage of. So, bonus number one is a fantastic ebook called Basic Concepts in Kabbalah. This ebook will work perfectly for your beginning stages in Kabbu. It doesn't matter what course you start from, or you start from the structured learning path. This book will have a lot of value for you. It covers the important foundations in Kabbalah, such as perception of reality and free will and the purpose of creation, the language of Kabbalah, and a lot more. Bonus number two is a one-on-one consultation session with one of our Kabbu instructors, including yours truly. So if you're not sure exactly how to start, what courses will work best for you, what is the best way to get into Kabbu, in this 30-minute session, you'll end up with a recommendation that is tailored for your preferences, for your needs, so you can get on board with Kabbu in the best possible way. Okay, bonus number three is an exclusive discount on an annual subscription for Kabbu. So a monthly subscription costs $19, which is $228 for 12 months. As a student who completed this crash course, you can purchase an annual subscription for only $97. This is a huge save. It amounts to about $8 a month, and you can take advantage of that. Again, unlimited access to all of Kabbu for $97 for a whole year. Let me add something about this. Our goal at Kabbu is to share the authentic wisdom of Kabbalah with the world, with anyone who's interested. We are a nonprofit There's no commercial purpose. Every dollar that we receive is reinvested in maintaining and growing Kabyu so we can make more content, more courses, more videos, and reach more people. Now, even without this discount, our Kabyu members typically say that the cost of a Kabyu membership is ridiculously low compared to the great value that they're getting. So we're confident 100% that if you have a real interest in authentic Kabbalah, there's just no way that you're not going to like your Kabyu journey. And that's why there's also a 30-day money-back guarantee. If for whatever reason you suddenly feel like it's not for you or anything of that sort, just let us know and you'll get a full refund. No problems, no questions asked, and no hard feelings also, because everything we do in Kabyu is truly done with love towards the people who have that unique desire to explore the authentic wisdom of Kabbalah, that desire that we call the point in the heart. And by the way, that point in the heart can appear in all kinds of people. The authentic wisdom of Kabbalah is really meant for all people from all walks of life without any differences of race, gender, nationality, or anything else. If you have a point in the heart, this authentic wisdom of Kabbalah can really speak to it and develop it. So let me share with you a sample of what some of our Kabyu members are saying about their experience.
I came to understanding of there's a purpose, there's a reason that you can see very briefly the threads of reality.
It's totally revolutionized my life, and it continues to. I can't see it ever ending because there's just so much richness and so much depth.
I feel like, oh my God, this is what I was looking for all this time.
The moment you're perception shift and altered, all of a sudden you see, you feel differently, you see life differently, you become more aware of your intention, of your action, of your thoughts. It's like one built over another.
That experience took me to a whole another level. It was like all that I was searching was actually given to me at that moment to understand what is really going on with our essence.
What is life? What is my place in the universe? There really are answers, true, real answers. And I'm still just barely unwrapping the package. But wow, the glimpses that I've seen, pretty amazing.
All right, this concludes our crash course, Top 10 Secrets of Authentic Kabbalah. If you have a desire to go deeper, give yourself this gift of authentic Kabbalah. Use the links below to take advantage of your exclusive bonuses. Thank you very much for watching this. I wish you all the best in your spiritual development, regardless of what path you take, and all the best.